so ill. Welcome to the Southern Illinois University School of Medicine podcast, addressing how our environment is affecting our health here in Southern Illinois. By speaking with leaders and experts, we hope to learn more about how we can impact our environment locally and improve our health. In this edition of So Ill, we hear from Rebecca Kagaris about the environmental impact of vaping.
Hello, my name is Alana Goodson. I'm a medical student here at SIU, and welcome to the So Ill podcast. And today we have
Rebecca Kagaris.
And what do you do?
Currently, I'm a PhD candidate at the College of Agriculture in the School of Forestry and Horticulture.
And what are you working on?
Well, I come from more of social work, kind of health and wellness background. So what I'm really interested in is basically, how does nature affect health? Positive and negative, but specifically I've been working on how different stakeholders in the region perceive the benefits of the Shawnee National Forest, sort of how they use the land, any benefits they perceive, health in the biggest sense of the word, meaning economic health, mental health, physical health, cultural health, I mean, just any way that they value the Shawnee. So that's what I've been interviewing people for the past 2 years, looking at all the diverse ways people interact with the land, as well as any benefits and values they perceive from the Shawnee Forest.
So I learned that you were doing some vaping and environment research. Can you tell me a little bit about it? How did you get into it?
Yeah, that was really cool, actually, because in one of my interviews, I connected with a professor in public health. And so initially I was interested in his research because he was in public health, but he was really focused on environmental health, which I thought was really cool. And then in that process, he told me that he had really been working on vaping specifically in the public health department in his research, but really looking at the environmental health impacts, which weren't as publicized. They're getting to be a little bit more visible in the literature, but still, we're just glad that the health impacts are being spoken about. But the environmental impacts definitely sort of fall by the wayside. So then I ended up taking his class in environmental health, and he's very active and he's very into research. So he told me, well, okay, instead of the final project, why don't you run a research project yourself on the environmental impacts of vaping, looking at what our students at SIU, their attitudes, beliefs, values towards vaping and specifically its environmental impacts. So it was really cool, but it was just a class project that has now turned into a larger project, and we're waiting for a publication to come out of it at the moment.
Were you just looking at the attitudes, like in specific, or was there anything else that you were looking for?
Well, what was really interesting with research, things always come up that you don't expect. So we initially wanted to look at those more unseen factors that affect vaping perceptions, their beliefs about the problem, how they view proposed solutions. So we looked at their environmental attitudes. We also looked at what they believe to be the biggest environmental hazards of vaping. We asked a lot of questions, kind of more sociologically based. But the one that really yielded our most important results was the question about identity, which we would have never thought that would have been such a big issue. But what came out of the research was that all of the respondents basically either identified as a current vapor, a former vapor, or a never vapor. So then looking at that, using identity as our basis, and then looking at their responses, it was very significant, and there were so many differences between the groups that it really illuminated a lot of different aspects that we may not have thought of.
So what kind of findings did you have?
Well, what became really significant, first of all, was just using those distinctions. And I want to say also that there wasn't that much research actually asking the vapors themselves. You know, you kind of get that public health data that's like, vapors need to do this, or let's put more education out there so vapors know what to do. Well, I really feel like we have to use more inductive methods like you're doing with your interviews and research to really understand the problem before we can start creating solutions, or else they're going to be just top down. They're not going to match the situation on the ground. So what we found was current vapers, never vapers, and former vapers basically had different experiences on every level. So one important question we asked them about was their knowledge and kind of how they related to the idea of greenwashing, which is in marketing sort of like, I don't know, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, a lot more people smoked cigarettes. But then there were legal ramifications, and so cigarettes kind of went by the wayside. Where do we think Philip Morris went? Where did the company go? If you trace it, you actually see that they've invested heavily in vaping. But initially in the medical world, vapes and vape devices were marketed, like they came around 2006, 2007, they were marketed as a healthier way to stop smoking. Okay, maybe if you're smoking a pack a day and whatever, yes, vapes might be better. I mean, maybe they help you to get off cigarettes. I mean, there is some research about that. But there's a lot of greenwashing that comes with that. So where a lot of younger people say, oh, and like we interviewed them on this, and the current vapers had the highest percentage of believing that vapes were healthier than cigarettes because they're currently vaping. Whereas people who were former vapers or never vapers were less influenced by greenwashing. They said, no, not at all. There's a lot of harmful chemicals. It's still very harmful to your health, which it is. So just seeing, okay, one aspect was how affected are the different groups by greenwashing? Because then that also could be a point of entry for intervention, education, or potentially legal action. But at the same time, you're seeing, oh, for current vapers to be able to vape, they are also believing this narrative about, okay, it's greener. And just how that works if you get into like greenwashing literature, it's very interesting. So there are a lot of interesting things, but some of the highlights were, you know, we talk about solutions. The funny part for me was never vapers almost unanimously said, we need to stop vaping, vaping cessation. It doesn't cost them anything because they're not vapers. Whereas current vapers had the lowest percentage of wanting to promote cessation for environmental benefits or whatever. What they were in favor of was having recycling outlets at vape stores because, okay, they were willing to do that. Like seeing where people are at, what are they willing to do? They're not gonna stop vaping, but how can we address this program? Yes, you could educate, but there might be ways to target education by saying, hey, are you believing this lie about greenwashing? Instead of just saying, stop vaping altogether. It's not gonna work for current vapers. So it might work with a former vapor, it might keep them from not vaping, it might work with a never vapor, but just seeing how those different groups perceived of the solution, totally different. Another interesting thing, like some people might, again, you've got to get in there and figure out what's going on. From afar, a good idea might be, let's just design more ecologically sound devices. Let's stop mining all the horrible extractive chemicals and minerals that are needed for vaping devices. There are a lot of different metals, and the mining itself has a huge carbon footprint, along with production, and then of course we're talking disposal. So someone might say, well, we just need to design a more ecologically friendly device so that it will harm the environment less. Great, that makes a lot of sense. But when we asked the actual vapers themselves, would you pay more for a more ecologically sound device? Only 25% of them would. So then again, you come against that sort of like top-down idea versus what's actually going to work on the ground. So you might get some traction out of that idea, but it's not a be-all, end-all. What the current vapers really supported was more recycling-type programs, because right now they're starting to have some kind of buyback program, but even then you don't really know where the vapes are going, what's going on with it. So before we asked, okay, what's your most common method of disposing of vapes? The most common was throwing it in the trash. Those are lithium batteries, which are considered hazardous materials. So that is going into our waste, it's going into our water, it's going into our landfills, it's on the side of the road, it's everywhere. It's a toxic battery. Not to mention the e-liquids, there are so many aspects to vapes that have toxic elements. So the most common method was throwing it in the trash, which is a huge problem. So there's no circular economy with it. There's no way, like, they're in the bind. You can't really blame the vapors at that sense. That was another aspect that came out to me, because there was no place to recycle. They didn't know what to do. They had no option, really. A lot of the second most common option, I think, was keeping it at home in a box. They can blow up. Like, they can literally blow up in people's pockets, and people are keeping them in boxes in their home. So it's a huge health hazard, but they were really caught between a rock and a hard place. Like, whoa, what am I supposed to do with these? A lot of them just kept in a box because they didn't really know what to do. So just having ways to either safely recycle or make the companies responsible for collecting the devices again at the store, or having a drop-off site, just to kind of raise the awareness about, especially the disposable ones that are used just once, which seem to be the most common, especially with young people. They're not going to invest $300 in a huge device. They're going to have the one last a couple days or whatever it is. So that was huge. One last thing I wanted to mention that was really surprising, just in terms of health education or environmental health education, we kind of asked them, all the respondents, about a type of hierarchical health index, hazardous health index. Like, what are you the most concerned with in terms of environmental health impacts with vapes? And we had land pollution, water pollution, air pollution, which gets a lot of citations in the literature for particulate matter and that kind of thing. What was right at the second point, right after land pollution, was the damage to wildlife, which came out of nowhere. And I thought, oh, this is a potential for public health officials, because they might be marketing, stop vaping, it's dangerous to your health. When in reality, what are the people who are connected to that community most concerned about? Land pollution, but right with that, wildlife. So it could actually illuminate to a sort of public health official a very creative way to have a huge impact on this community, to potentially create new solutions with the vape waste problem, or to make them more aware by highlighting the damage vapes are doing to wildlife, which I would have never come up with.
Yeah.
So just like you're doing, like, looking from the ground up yields tons of different solutions, as well as seeing what exactly where the problem lies and where are the barriers, whether it's institutional barriers, like we said, there's no recycling, or a knowledge barrier, people don't know about greenwashing. Like, it shows very specific ways where you could have an intervention that would also make sense to the people who are affected. So I think that's a huge lesson for just public health, medicine, environmental health in general.
That was beautiful, and I am very grateful for all of your applications to medicine. It's definitely given me some stuff to think about. I guess, do you have anything else for our listeners at home?
Yes. Now, this is more of a conceptual issue, and I don't know if people are going to fully get it, because it does require sort of a mind shift or just that kind of a perception shift. But because I'm not exactly in public health, it's not exactly my realm. But what I see is that there's a general medicine, public health, and then off to the side, we have environmental health as a completely separate realm. And what I found from this paper is that until we see environmental health exactly as public health, nothing is ever going to change. Having them separate in any way, to me, does not make sense. It doesn't show a reciprocal relationship between, like, the ecosystem services that nature provides and our own health and well-being. If we just think we're going to have health without any connection to nature, without any concern for those services or just functions of nature that keep us alive as being connected, it does not create a very beautiful picture to me of holistic health. So that's where I'm sort of working more to just bring more connections to that realm, just connecting people to place, humans to habitat. We are not separate. And you know, you're in medicine. We're seeing crazy chronic health problems from people being disconnected to nature. It's going to look different from different people, but eating horribly, circadian rhythm is off, stress system is through the roof because they're just in fight or flight, scrolling all day and not getting the benefits of letting their mind rest and just seeing these fractal patterns in nature, grounding, all of these things. And if we see ourselves as still separate and we're going to erect these hospitals that have nothing to do with nature and things like that, I just don't see it creating long-lasting health and connection for our populations, where your podcast and other aspects that I'm seeing in certain hospitals, in certain medical contexts, where they're making sure patients have windows, where they're bringing in even pictures of nature, which have been shown in the literature to positively affect immunity and healing and all these types of things. So I'm really excited about your podcast, but I'm also really excited about these types of papers and researches that really dig from the ground, hear from people themselves, and see where the gaps are to try to start really making connections that make sense to people, have meaning, and can also just sort of change systems that are negatively affecting our health and the environment's health.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Rebecca Cagares is a PhD candidate in the SIU School of Forestry and Horticulture. Tune in next time for another enlightening episode of So Ill. This podcast is a collaborative production between the SIU School of Medicine and WSIU Public Broadcasting. You can find more episodes at wsiu.org.